This is the Phyllis Schlafly Report. Mrs. Schlafly is a constitutional attorney, pro-family leader, and author of 20 books, including Feminist Fantasies. And now the president of Eagle Forum, Phyllis Schlafly.
Have you heard of Common Core Standards, the new plan being adopted in public schools across America? It's a plan for a national standard to be imposed that will decide what American kids learn and what they will not learn. Parents are really upset about this plan. Nationalized education standards should be unconstitutional under the 10th Amendment, which limits federal influence over the states. The General Educational Provisions Act, a federal law, prohibits any department, agency, officer, or employee of the United States from exercising any direction, supervision, or control over the curriculum, program of instruction, administration, or personnel of any educational institution, school, or school system, or over the selection of library resources, textbooks, or other printed or published instructional materials by any educational institution or school system. Close quote. Now that sounds pretty strong from federal law, a law specifically enacted to severely limit federal control of education. The new Common Core standards do limit local control of education. They are copyrighted and owned by private organizations. Federal dictates assure that 85% of academic standards in reading and math will strictly adhere to Common Core standards, leaving only 15% of the standards eligible to be altered by a local district. For example, Common Core does not teach cursive writing, and if a local school wants to teach it anyway, instead of keyboarding mandated by Common Core, cursive writing would likely use up the entire allowed 15%. Now, we're always being told to get advice from other countries, so how about taking some advice from our neighbor, Canada? Canada has no national standards. All standards are adopted locally, and Canada does not even have a National Department of Education.
This has been the Phyllis Schlafly Report from Eagle Forum. Can we send you the latest edition of the Education Reporter? Just write Eagle Forum Radio, Alton, Illinois, 62002 and read about what's working and what isn't in schools across the country and in your community. Write Eagle Forum Radio, Alton, Illinois, 62002 or go online to eagleforum.org. Join us again next time for the Phyllis Schlafly Report.
Herbal Healer Spring Sale. 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes. COQ10 with hawthorn, glucosamine chondroitin, sea cucumber, colloidal minerals, Superfam and Super Male Plex, colon enhancer, our top-selling liquid, Cal Mag Vitamin D, MSM Sulfur Capsules, and Elderberry Power Capsules. We also offer certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Free memberships and free online newsletters also available at herbalhealer.com. Herbal Healer has been serving the natural medicine industry for 25 years. This is a company you can count on. Visit herbalhealer.com today. Herbalhealer.com. That's herbalhealer.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
My name is Don Wiskin. I had a massive heart attack at 42. The doctors could do nothing but send me home with disability as my future. I reversed the damage done to my heart with a natural remedy. I am now 58 and contribute my good health today to Extendovite. You have heard my messages for many years. A lot of people have taken Extendovite and improved their health issues. We are surrounded by fast food, toxic air, and chemicals that our body cannot eliminate. As we age, they can age us faster. Clean yourself out with Extendovite, available in capsule or liquid form. Get a 2-month supply for only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. You can live a longer, healthier life just by calling 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Attention veterans, fellow preppers, and outdoorsmen. You have to check out AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. They're veteran-owned and operated, offering GMO-free food, camping supplies, and much more. The best customer service and fast shipping makes AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com second to none. Unique products and super low prices make AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com the best choice for emergency preparedness. No automated computers, just good people trying to help you prepare. Finally, brother veterans, if you need help with food or blankets, call 818-720-0759.
RBN is having the end-of-the-year pledge drive. To encourage listener support, for donations of $100 or more, you get an RBN coffee mug and a T-shirt. You can mail your donation to Republic Broadcasting Network, 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. You can donate online through PayPal or make a donation via phone by calling 800-724-2719. All donations are greatly appreciated and needed. Please make a donation today.
Welcome back. This is Deanna, and this is the second hour of Spingola Speaks. And I'm going to talk in this hour about the Genocide Treaty and individual threat. With the assistance of Raphael Lemkin, Vespasian V. Pella, and Henry Donadue de Bebres, the UN Secretariat drafted the first version of the Genocide Convention. Then, an ad hoc committee set up under the authority of the Economic and Social Council reworked the Secretariat draft. In late 1948, the ad hoc committee draft furnished the foundation for negotiations in the 6th Committee of the General Assembly. Delegates agreed on the final text of the convention and submitted it to the General Assembly. Winston Churchill said, he was such a scoundrel, he said, "We are in the presence of a crime that has no name," unquote. He must have been looking in the mirror. Raphael Lemkin, inspired by those words, searched for a word to replace the word barbarity that would ignite sympathy and moral indignation. He wanted an all-encompassing term that covered the methodical annihilation of people and cultures, deportation, the division of families, restraint of academic expression, the destruction of art, the obliteration of political and social institutions, language, religion, economic security, and health. Now, that's a lot of things. Webster's New International Dictionary added the word in 1944. In 1943, Lemkin, who lobbied for the acceptance of the UN Genocide Convention at the end of World War II, coined the term genocide. It is a combination of the Greek for race or tribe, geno, and the Latin for killing, side, genocide. Lemkin was the earliest proponent of the Genocide Convention. He invoked the Armenian case as a definitive example of genocide in the 20th century. He described the crime as, and I quote, "the systematic destruction of a whole national, racial, or religious groups." The sort of thing, this is a quote, "the sort of thing Hitler did to the Jews and the Turks did to the Armenians." Well, actually, it wasn't exactly the Turks. It was the Turks under what was under a group of people that were called the Young Turks, which were a bunch of Jews who were occupying the Turkish government. Okay, the UN adopted the first resolution on genocide at Lemkin's urging on December 11th, 1946, Resolution 96.1. And the UN Genocide Convention recognized the Armenian Genocide as the type of crime the UN intended to prevent by codifying existing standards. In 1948, the UN War Crimes Commission invoked the Armenian Genocide as a precedent for the Nuremberg Tribunals. Just a side note. They passed this in 1948. So what's going on? Don't they apply it? They selectively apply it, because obviously there's a genocide against Palestinians as we speak. Lemkin also used the term in his book. Oh, and there have been so many other genocides since that time, on Diego Garcia, in all kinds of places. Anyway, back to this chapter. Lemkin had used the term in his book, Axis Rule in Occupied Europe, which I said came out in 1944. On December 9th, 1948, the UN General Assembly adopted the text of the Convention for the Prevention and Punishment of the Crime of Genocide. They obtained the required 20 ratifications, which enabled them to enforce the General Assembly Resolution 260 on January 12, 1951. The Genocide Treaty altered the reprehensible act of genocide, usually perpetrated by a national government or political movement, to an act that an individual would commit. Let me read that again. The Genocide Treaty altered the reprehensible act of genocide, usually perpetrated by a national government or political movement, to an act that an individual would commit. The treaty makes it possible for a national or foreign government to charge any individual with genocide if that person has committed an act the state considers harmful to any religion or ethnic group. On December 11, 1946, the UN General Assembly declared genocide a crime under international law. Because the treaty states that a foreign court may accuse and prosecute someone as a treaty violator, Senator Jesse Helms argued that the treaty eviscerated the Constitution and subjected the United States to false lawsuits wherein another country could arrest, seize, and try any American citizen. The Genocide Treaty, neutralizing American law, poses a dire threat to American sovereignty and embodies ambiguous, dangerous wording that makes every American vulnerable to prosecution. The Genocide Treaty threatens U.S. constitutional sovereignty, as the Constitution states that when America makes an international treaty, it takes precedence over the nation's internal laws. The U.S. Supreme Court has never defined any treaty signed by the United States government as unconstitutional. This is because the U.S. Constitution yields our national laws to the agreements that U.S. officials make with other nations. Essentially, foreign powers are devising the regulations and domestic laws applicable to American citizens who commit crimes in their own country. For the first time in American history, an international treaty now adjudicates domestic law that may incarcerate American citizens. Because of this expansive and all-inclusive treaty, one may classify almost any kind of criminal action as genocidal and almost any person as a violator. The apparently omniscient nature of the treaty can also ascertain the motives behind the violator's actions. Officials may charge the violator with advocating violence against the supposed victim. Foreign powers may extradite American citizens deemed treaty violators to another country for trial by a foreign court. Officials in foreign countries may hear about the commitment of a crime and request extradition of those individuals for a trial in the World Court of Switzerland. Excuse me. On September 6, 2006, President George W. Bush admitted that the CIA directs rendition flights to secret prisons and interrogation sites around the world. Despite British and American denials, a former unnamed government official said that the CIA uses Diego Garcia and American naval ships in the island's territorial waters as detention sites for enhanced interrogation of high-level terrorists. And that's, of course, undefined. The Genocide Treaty, amended in October 1968, defines the killing of just one person as genocide, despite the dictionary definition, which is the systematic killing of a whole group of people or a nation, or the physical dismemberment and liquidation of a people on a large scale. Treaty stipulations even allow the state to prosecute an individual. Okay, we're going to a break. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
This is Dr. Robert Rowan here to give you an important message regarding stem cell treatment. World-renowned physician, stem cell expert, and friend Dr. David Steinblatt has performed over 8,000 stem cell treatments since 2001. Bone marrow stem cells are completely legal to do here in the USA. The bone marrow stem cell treatment is not only fast, done in less than 2 to 3 hours, but is relatively pain-free and has little to no recovery time. Dr. David Steinblatt and his office are able to help and treat patients who suffer from cerebral palsy, traumatic brain injury, stroke, macular degeneration, arthritis, Parkinson's disease, congestive heart failure, and more. Personally using their services for my knee and seeing great improvement, Dr. David Steinblatt is highly recommended by me. Go to stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 to find out more. Again, stemcellmd.org or call 800-300-1063 today to receive more information.
Hi, I'm with Keller Williams Realty. I'm in your neighborhood to see if you have any real estate needs.
Maybe. What would you do as a realtor to market my home?
Well, my skills are in knowing the market, listing your home for the best price possible, negotiating on your behalf, advertising your home, and helping to defend your castle.
Defend my castle?
That's right. In Texas, it's called the Castle Law, and a portion of my commission will go to Gun Owners of America as a charitable cause to help secure our freedoms.
Really? That does make you different from other realtors.
It's about time people make a stand for what they believe in. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, yes, I do. And I'd be glad if you helped me sell this home. And my friends will be, too.
Here's my business card for your friends. They can call me at 877-605-9200 and ask for Sandra. Oh, and if they're not in Texas, I can still refer them to a great Keller Williams agent where they live. They just need to call 877-605-9200. 877-605-9200.
That moment of panic. Sheer terror, really. You're afraid to answer the phone. Frightened by who might be at the door. If you're facing foreclosure or being harassed by debt collectors, you know the feeling. You need to visit whatliesinyourdebt.com to turn the tables on the banksters, collection agencies, and other crooks. Whatliesinyourdebt.com has solutions. Whatliesinyourdebt.com features live training webinars from experts, a member forum, support from experts who've been where you are right now and came out the other side in a better financial situation. If you are like millions of Americans who are behind on their mortgage, behind on their credit cards, or just being harassed by debt collectors, then this system is for you. We promise. If you cannot stop your foreclosure, even if it's imminent, if you cannot stop those debt collectors from bugging you, if you cannot clean up your credit, and finally, if you cannot make a few thousand bucks during the entire process, make money from the debt collectors, yes, at whatliesinyourdebt.com, we will refund your money 100% in the first 60 days. Don't fear the bill collectors anymore. Visit whatliesinyourdebt.com.
All righty, and I'm back. And we were talking about the Genocide Treaty and individual threat because it is applicable to one individual. Treaty stipulations even allow the state to prosecute an individual for genocide, even if that person's actions have not led to the death of another person. Despite the dictionary definition, the treaty definition of genocide cites the mental harm, that's a quote, mental harm, unquote, inflicted on members of a particular ethnic or religious group. Read that, Jew. Officials define mental harm as criticism, relocating or ghettoizing a group of people, or causing residential discrimination, or imposing birth control. It's okay for the government to do all this stuff, though. One does not actually have to physically harm another person to be guilty of a treaty violation. Treaty provisions indicate that a court may try a person for treaty violation if that person says or does something that, and I quote, appears harmful to the best interests of another religion, unquote. That court may impose a heavy penalty, as much as $1 million and a 20-year to life sentence in a federal penitentiary. The U.S. court decided on this severe and repressive penalty on October 14, 1988. The Senate declined to impose capital punishment at the time. Convicted murderers in California routinely receive no fine and 6 years in prison. However, the architects of the Genocide Treaty and those officials who ratified it considered the harming of a member of a religious or ethnic group more dangerous. Conspicuously, this treaty does not apply to genuine genocidists, such as national governments or political groups who have or in the future will attempt to kill certain groups of people within their own borders or in other nations, but it only applies to individuals. Yet, in 1948, the intentions for devising the treaty and the UN's adoption of the document were the allegations against Germany made during the Nuremberg trials. Still, the architects of the treaty do not mention political genocide. According to the treaty, nations are not liable for their actions because the treaty does not mention governments or their political actions. The treaty only addresses individual crimes and not political crimes. Yet political groups and governments are the only entities that can perpetrate genocide. Various opponents argue that the treaty supersedes the U.S. Constitution and would, if enforced, be detrimental to the United States. According to the State Department, the Soviets, before the fall of the USSR, which signed the Genocide Treaty on December 16, 1949, regularly imprisoned Christians in Russia and its satellite countries. However, the Genocide Treaty, as mentioned, did not apply to a nation's genocide of religious groups, but rather omits them. Additionally, the very nations that regularly that were regularly engaging in genocidal behavior were the first countries to sign the treaty. The phrasing in the treaty allows these governments to accuse, imprison, and impose the death penalty on its citizens for the very acts that they were committing. In other words, that they, the governments, were committing. These oppressive, tyrannical countries include Albania, Bulgaria, Red China, Cuba, Czechoslovakia, Vietnam, and the Soviet Union. While the treaty forbids individuals from certain behaviors against national, ethnical, racial, or religious groups, it overlooks the same actions committed by governments. One might miss the significance of the religious aspects of the Genocide Treaty in that the treaty allows for the legal prosecution for mental harm. And that's a quote, mental harm. Currently, numerous groups vilify traditional Christianity and demand the removal of biblical symbols in the public arena, while Christian Zionism maintains a very large audience and political influence and appears to tolerate the abandonment of the manger scene in preference of the national menorah at the White House. Broadcast news and the entertainment media functioning as perception management, has secularized and demoralized our culture while marginalizing traditional Christianity and promoting Christian Zionism. In 1979, fundamentalists in the United States became strong supporters of Israel, seeing the Jews as important in the fulfillment of their vision of Armageddon. Jerry Falwell and the Moral Majority became outspoken supporters of Israel. Falwell said, and I quote, "To stand against Israel is to stand against God," unquote. Prime Minister Menachem Begin of Israel called on Reverend Falwell in 1981 after the Israeli bombing of an Iraqi nuclear facility in order to rally a favorable response from the American public. Falwell gave a sermon on behalf of Israel and asked the most influential of the 80,000 preachers associated with the Moral Majority to do the same. In 1982, Ron Goodwin announced that the Moral Majority was going to lead tours to Israel, and I quote, "to transform as many concerned American citizens into well-informed, educated friends of Israel as possible," unquote. In February of 1985, Falwell led a group of nearly 1,000 to Israel, where, among other activities, they met with prominent Israeli leaders, including General Ariel Sharon. Falwell and the Moral Majority also encouraged U.S. citizens to register for the 1984 elections and to vote for legislators who strongly supported Israel. In 1990, Esther Levins, a widow of an AIPAC activist, and Christian friend Alan Mothersill started a pro-Israel interreligious study group following President Bush's agreement to extend loans to Israel on the condition that Israel would not settle on the West Bank. Levins did not anticipate the enthusiastic support she received from the evangelicals. She immediately created a network of evangelical and Jewish organizations which resulted in Voices United for Israel, now known as the Unity Coalition for Israel, which claims to represent 40 million people. Yekiel Eckstein assisted in the organization's expansion. Douglas Feith would become its honorary policy chairman in 2005. However, the Anti-Defamation League, the National Jewish Coalition, and Eckstein's IFC left the Unity Board because it included groups that proselytize Jews. The Unity Coalition for Israel's mission statement reads, and I quote, The mission of the Unity Coalition for Israel is to focus the efforts of secular and religious organizations and individuals for whom the existence of the State of Israel is central and essential to the future of the free world. We educate these organizations and individuals on security issues and radical ideologies, including global Islamic terrorism affecting not only Israel, but all of Western civilization, unquote. We'll be right back in 3 minutes.
How important is the air you breathe? Our air purifiers produce activated oxygen, called Aerin. Activated oxygen is the natural enemy of odors, pollutants, and many other harmful substances, yet it's completely safe. Our powerful air purifiers unleash the power of a thunderstorm, destroying pollutants in the air we breathe. It destroys many viruses, bacteria, and fungi, kills molds, and oxidizes chemical fumes and toxic gases. It removes smoke, pollen, and pet odors. Made with quality stainless steel, our portable air purifiers come with a manufacturer's 4-year warranty. If you haven't experienced the Aerin process of fresh, clean air, then call us today and receive 10% off your order. 877-605-9200. Again, that's 877-605-9200. Time for you to breathe clearly again. 877-605-9200.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
There's no reason to be sick this season with Supernatural Silver's incredible technology. You can give your immune system the support it needs to help fight off colds, flus, and other nasty pathogens that can ruin the holidays for you and those you love. Used internally or topically, Supernatural Silver is a great defense against sore throats, runny noses, sinus or ear infections, and a whole host of other illnesses. Supernatural Silver is extremely safe and a great way to protect yourself and the ones you love. No one knows what the future may bring, so be smart and plan ahead. Have Supernatural Silver in your emergency preparedness arsenal and give someone a gift that's meaningful, a gift that can change lives. Give the gift of good health this year. Go to supernaturalsilver.com and use the promo code SILVER2013 for 20% off your entire order. That's supernaturalsilver.com. And like us on Facebook.
Do you flinch when a police car appears in your rearview mirror or you get pulled over? Are you squeamish when an envelope arrives in the mail with a return address of a court, a government agency like the IRS, or some law firm? Would you like to escape government agency harassment? Then visit escapeharassment.com. George Bush allegedly says, "The government constitution is nothing but a doggone piece of paper." Well, that's a contract. A contract is an offer acceptance of that offer, at which point a contract arises by law and the offerer can no longer withdraw the offer. We teach, do not accept. That way there is no contract or agreement for you to go to their court or private club meeting. To escape government agency harassment like the IRS, visit escapeharassment.com. This is a tried and proven experienced process, not experimental, with a money-back guarantee that it works and success testimonials from previous students. Remember, escapeharassment.com. That's escapeharassment.com.
I'm Larry Pratt of Gun Owners of America, and I want to invite you to join the Second Amendment movement with Gun Owners of America, the only no-compromise gun lobby in Washington. Take action by becoming a GOA member today by going to gunowners.org. Gun Owners members receive the GOA newsletter, fact sheets, alerts, certificates, and more. But there's more to joining GOA than just a list of member benefits. The united voice of GOA members has been successful in defeating restrictive legislation designed to disarm our population. GOA has helped get strong constitutional members of Congress like Senator Ted Cruz elected. And with your help, GOA will continue to successfully defend the rights of gun owners in the courts. Participate in our efforts to restore and preserve the nation's right to keep and bear arms. All contributions to our lobbying efforts are used exclusively to support or oppose firearms legislation. Join online at gunowners.org.
Alrighty, I was talking about the Genocide Treaty, and by the way, we do not have a program tomorrow. We will be rebroadcasting, so keep that in mind, because it is New Year's Day. So, and I hope everybody has a happy and safe New Year's evening or New Year's Eve, and that they enjoy tomorrow. Okay, in July 1991, Levins, a public relations and communications professional, founded the organization comprised of more than 200 Christian and Jewish organizations to reach out to churches, synagogues, prayer networks, think tanks, and individuals. They regularly propagate information to 1,700 religious radio stations, 245 Christian TV stations, and all secular media. Emails are sent regularly to secular newspapers and magazines, 120 Christian newspapers, and 70 Jewish newspapers. Where and when did all this Jewish power begin? Kind of amazing here. Jewish power with the American government began in August 1790 with President George Washington when he visited Newport, Rhode Island. The Jews from the local synagogue handed him a letter praising the God of Israel for establishing an unbiased government. Jewish religious schools still study his eloquent response, essentially a grant promising Jewish freedom. He wrote, "The government of the United States of America, which gives to bigotry no sanction, to persecution no assistance, acquires only that they who live under its protection should demean themselves as good citizens in giving it all, on occasions, their effectual support." With his precedent-setting letter, Washington was the first national leader in centuries to regard the Jews as free and equal citizens. Washington, in one of the three letters to the Jews that year, in answer to their three letters, affirmed that America was unlike other countries in that it had given to the world examples of an enlarged and liberal policy, a policy worthy of imitation. All possess alike liberty of conscience and immunities of citizenship. And that's a quote. The Jews had never resided in a country that separated church and state, as defined in the First Amendment, where the government declined to acknowledge or administer any religious society. Because Congress, and I quote, "Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof," the Jews were free to legally practice their religion. The government could not render them second-class citizens by creating a national church, ultimately applicable to each individual state. With this newfound freedom, they could also abstain from such worship. The state would not designate a chief rabbi or sanction a Jewish council. Rabbis would lack the traditional managerial control over the Jewish community unless individuals willingly followed them. Consequently, any assertive Jew or Jewish group could successfully claim to speak for national Jewry and demand equal redress, time, or the implementation of exclusive Jewish laws from Washington's accommodating, well-compensated politicians. On January 31, 1991, the House of Representatives introduced a resolution to designate March 26, 1991 as Education Day, actually a day to recognize the 89th birthday of Rabbi Menachem M. Schneerson, the zealous leader of the Lubavitch movement. The resolution was also a deceptive way of passing the Noahide laws through which the government could control the American people, eliminate Christianity, and eliminate all Christians and enslave the remaining Gentiles. Jewish lobbyists persuaded minority leader Representative Robert H. Mitchell of Illinois to introduce the resolution, referring it to the House Post Office and Civil Service Committee. In early March 1991, 225 members of the House decided to co-sponsor this resolution, most likely without the knowledge of the nature of the document. Others probably told them it was a resolution to honor in honor of Rabbi Schneerson's birthday. However, someone attached the Noahide laws. The committee referred the resolution to the House for a vote on March 5, 1991. Records show that the House unanimously consented to the resolution. Four people were present for that vote: Congressman Thomas Sawyer of Ohio, Congressman Thomas Rich of Pennsylvania, Minority Leader Mitchell, who was Jewish, and Congressman Gilman. Ridge subsequently assisted in the cover-up of 9/11 by claiming that Flight 93 crashed in Pennsylvania, although no one ever found any airplane parts, passengers, or baggage. Ridge's career spiraled upward from governor of Pennsylvania 1995 to 2001 to becoming the very, very first secretary of the new Department of Homeland Security, and he served in that position from 2003 to 2005. As a member of the investigative committee, he concealed important facts regarding the tragic multiple shootings at Virginia Tech, which occurred on April 16, 2007. The term unanimous consent usually means mischief. In this case, on that day, officials had already dismissed the entire membership of the House as they had accomplished all the work for that day. Following their dismissal, the architects of the resolution brought it up for vote on the House floor with the only select members present. Those four passed the resolution by unanimous consent on March 5, 1991. 2 days later, on March 7, 1991, the U.S. Senate passed the resolution by voice vote. On March 20, 1991, President George H.W. Bush signed it, and it became Public Law 102-14. Congress' adoption of the seven Noahide laws, along with the president, establishes the law as the bedrock, and I quote, "the bedrock of society from the dawn of civilization," unquote. Those laws are now the law of the land. These laws are from the Babylonian Talmud, not the Old Testament. The penalty for violating any one of the seven Noahide laws, according to the Talmud, is death by decapitation, and that's from the Sanhedrin 57a. In other words, officials may charge an individual who worships Christ with a violation of the third Noahide law, idolatry, and impose decapitation. Now, this is all very interesting, and we really don't know what the Congress is passing. We don't know what is going on. They don't tell us. They don't tell the media, of course. And so we have all kinds of very interesting laws that we know nothing about. We will take calls. I want to next talk about obedience, a psychological mechanism, and I'm going to talk about Stanley Milgram, who was very instrumental in promoting the idea that Germans were flawed, that somehow they had a flawed character. He had he conducted tests at Yale University to prove his thesis, and we will talk about, well, let's start right now. Stanley Milgram, a Jew, grew up in a Jewish immigrant neighborhood, and with his family during the war, listened to the news from Europe, and of course, it was all very biased. His father's family, and I quote, "escaped the Nazis," unquote, but his mother's family was not so lucky. Some relatives came to stay with the Milgrams after the war, and he remembered seeing the tattooed numbers. In 1946, Stanley, at his bar mitzvah, said, and I quote, "As I come of age and find happiness in joining the ranks of Israel, the knowledge of the tragic suffering of my fellow Jews throughout war-torn Europe makes this also a solemn event and an occasion to reflect upon the heritage of my people, which now becomes mine." While traveling through Europe in 1958, Milgram wrote home to a friend, and I quote, "My true spiritual home is Central Europe. I should have been born into the German-speaking Jewish community of Prague and died in the gas chambers," unquote. Okay, we're going to break. Right back, 3 minutes.
World-renowned physician and stem cell expert Dr. David Steenblok, D.O., and his research staff have spent years developing all-natural formulations that support the body's own stem cell production and mobilization system. An everyday stem cell supplement, creating the birth of Stemgevity. Stemgevity stem cell mobilization formula is for use by men, women, and children of all ages to support your body's stem cell system naturally, quickly, and safely. Stemgevity helps support your heart and circulatory system, bones and joints, liver, skin, brain, and much more. Order your bottle now at StemGevity.com today. That's StemGevity. StemGevity.com. Or call now toll-free 800-300-1063. Buy two bottles and receive a third bottle free by mentioning RBN. Anyone who wants to get healthy needs StemGevity. Call 800-300-1063 today.
Do you love America? Do you support the right to bear arms? Do you have an opinion on the current immigration issue? Do you believe in the dollar? You have a voice. You have an opinion. Let it be heard. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com right now and make your voice count. Do you like your rights taken away for the so-called sake of public safety? Do you want to repeal Obamacare? Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today and fight back. All you have to do is fill out a short survey and you're done. Simple, easy, fast. For your time, you get entered to win free gold and silver. That's right. Get gold and silver free by filling out this short survey that enters you to win. AmericanFreedomSurvey.com. Go to AmericanFreedomSurvey.com today. That's AmericanFreedomSurvey.com.
There are many water filters to choose from, but there is only one system that is consistently customer rated 5 stars as the number one system for effective filtration of fluoride, radiation, drug residues, heavy metals, a wide range of radioisotopes, and more. Introducing the PureFect Ultra, the next generation water filter that also raises alkaline pH, improves antioxidant potential, and has advanced anti-radiation technology. All while using no electricity. Sold worldwide, it provides virtually instant clean water on demand. It is not made in China, and the shipping is free to all 50 states. Buy your PureFect Ultra today by visiting PureFectFilters.com or call 888-891-4821. Again, that's 888-891-4821 or visit PureFectFilters.com.
Earthquakes, hurricanes, nuclear accidents, terror attacks, and all-out social collapse. With the world today more volatile than ever, the future has never looked more uncertain. Survivalist Magazine is the one resource you can't afford to be without. Claim your free trial subscription now at www.survivalist.com and your first issue ships immediately. Get all the details and more at www.survivalist.com or order by phone. Call 1-866-437-6570. Your survival may depend on it.
Nice shooting. Hey, that's a sweet AK-47 chest rig. Is that multicam?
Yep, got it from StrikeHardGear.com.
Strike what?
StrikeHardGear.com.
Set your sights on StrikeHardGear.com. Tough, tactical gear for your Soviet-style weapon that's made in the USA. Affordable, plus a no-questions-asked 30-day money-back guarantee and lifetime replacement warranty. StrikeHardGear.com. Go ahead. Pull the trigger.
Welcome back. This is Deanna. Alrighty. In 1960, I'm talking about Stanley Milgram. Stanley Milgram, a psychologist by now, began his career at Yale. He planned to scientifically prove that the Germans have a basic character flaw. That's a quote, basic character flaw, and that they have, and I quote, a readiness to obey authority without question, no matter what outrageous acts the authority commands, unquote, which should make non-Germans feel better, even morally superior, about the whole business of slaughtering strangers during warfare. Apparently, Milgram learned some of his managerial techniques from Solomon Asch, A-S-C-H, one of the masters of experimental and Gestalt psychology, and particularly on conformity. Historians such as William L. Shearer, and I use the word historian lightly, a foreign correspondent who lived and worked in France from 1925 to 1933 and in Germany from 1934 to 1940, have used the Germans are different hypotheses to explain the systematic destruction of the Jews by the Third Reich. He says, one madman could decide to destroy the Jews and even create a master plan for getting it done. However, to implement it on a scale that Hitler did meant that thousands of other people had to go along with the scheme and help to do the work. The Scherer thesis, which Milgram set out to test, is that Germans have a basic character flaw which explains the whole thing, and this flaw is readiness to obey authority without question, no matter what outrageous acts the authority commands. In his 1960 book, The Rise and Fall of the Third Reich, Scherer wrote, and I quote, "The man who founded the Third Reich, who ruled it ruthlessly and often with uncommon shrewdness, who led it to dizzy heights and to such a sorry end, was a person of undoubted, if evil, genius. It is true that he found that in the German people, as a mysterious providence and centuries of experience had molded them up to that time, a natural instrument which he was able to shape to his own sinister ends. But without Adolf Hitler, who was possessed of a demonic personality, a granite will, uncanny instincts, a cold ruthlessness, a remarkable intellect, a soaring imagination, and until toward the end, when drunk with power and success, he overreached himself, an amazing capacity to size up people and situations, there almost certainly would never have been a Third Reich," unquote. Oh, we are running. We're running out of time, and I've not run out of information. Anyway, our scientist went on, Milgram went on to do his experiment, and let me just scroll down here and tell you about his experiment. And interestingly, the timing is just so questionable here. Milgram began his famous, influential, and controversial experiments in July 1961, just 3 months after the beginning of Adolf Eichmann's much-publicized trial in Jerusalem after his illegal kidnapping. Milgram, with his experiments, addressed the question, and I quote, "Could it be that Eichmann and his million accomplices in the Holocaust were just following orders? Could we call them all accomplices?" Unquote. Joseph DeMau, a participant in the 1961 experiment at Yale University, described his suspicions and early withdrawal as a teacher, as he thought that the whole experiment was designed to see if ordinary Americans would obey immoral orders, as many Germans had done during the Nazi period, and that is a quote. Milgram completed his last experiment on Sunday, May 27th, and that's 1962, and wrote a letter stating the termination of his experiments to Claude Buxton, the chairman of the psychology department at Yale, on June 1, 1962, the day after the Israeli government executed Adolf Eichmann for his role in the Nazis' final solution to the Jewish question. In October 1963, the psychological community and the general public, via the New York Times, the London Times, and later numerous other newspapers, would learn about Milgram's very, and I quote, "very strong findings." Very strong findings. Soon, many magazines picked up Milgram's work, and in 1979, 60 Minutes on CBS featured his findings in a segment, and it also served as the basis for a play, The Dogs of Pavlov, on November 1st. The Dogs of Pavlov. Then, on November 1st, 1978, President Jimmy Carter, via Executive Order Number 12093, appointed Elie Wiesel as chairman of the newly created 34-member Commission on the Holocaust, which began its operations on January 15, 1979. The timing of these events is surely questionable. Publishing companies translated and issued Milgram's 1974 book into, would you believe, 11 languages. Publishers printed his journal articles in German in 1966 and in Hebrew in 1976. His study certainly function to take the focus off the American war crimes and help validate stories of a Holocaust and how evil the Germans were, given the catastrophic numbers and the millions of World War II victims, the hundreds of towns and cities that the Allies bombed, and the 1.5 million Germans who died in Eisenhower's death camps, the millions that Stalin starved or otherwise killed. One might ask Milgram, why the heck did he not accurately reframe his test question and ask why tens of thousands of Soviet, British, American, and other soldiers obey authority figures and deliberately destroy another nation and millions of its citizens over the period of two world wars? Stanley Milgram's three-year psychological study, as described in Obedience to Authority, his 1974 book, provides some helpful answers to those troubling earlier questions. You know, the timing, as I said, of all of this, and when you look at other movies, when you look at the movies that Hollywood was bringing out in 1965, Sophie's Choice and some of the other things, and the other movies that were coming out, all of this was timed perfectly for the implementation of the so-called United States Holocaust Memorial Museum on public land, publicly funded, except for it's mostly about half publicly funded, and now that museum implements the teaching, the instruction of Holocaust education throughout the country. And what if the millions in Europe? What if the millions of Americans who died in both world wars? And no mention of that. None at all. See, do we have any callers? Okay, no callers. Anyway, thank you so much for your support. It's been a very eventful 2013. We've talked about a lot of things this year, and hopefully 2014 will be as productive. I appreciate you listening to my programs, and I appreciate the listeners. I appreciate RBN because RBN has given me the opportunity to have a voice. And I do hope that you will contribute to the year-end campaign. They can certainly use the money. And I wish you a safe New Year's Eve. And thank you so much. Talk to you in 2014.